The streets don't love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your hosts, Floyd and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back.
Good evening, and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back radio show. I'm your host, Lucinda, with my co-host, Boyd. And our topic is, as always, The Streets Don't Love You Back. Join us every Wednesday night with real people, real stories, and real changes. As we hear the truth about gangs, drugs, violence, abuse, and other life issues. We have a great show for you tonight, so stay tuned in to the hottest radio show worldwide.
We have a great show for you tonight with our guest, Miss Denise Jones. She was born and reared in the drug-infested environment of Chicago's West Side, the oldest of seven siblings. She was reared mostly by her grandparents. By the time she was five, she'd been molested by several family members. As a young teenager, began shooting heroin and began a cycle of crime and addiction that lasted for 14 years. Since then, Denise has met her Lord Jesus Christ, and he's given her a second chance, and she's changed her life and wrote a book and changed her destiny. So she's here tonight to tell us about her life growing up and what she went through and how she was able to change and what she's doing now to help other people. Before we introduce Denise, I'm going to introduce my co-host Boyd to the show.
Yes, I would like to thank everyone who tunes in to the show every Wednesday. And I would like to thank Ms. Denise for allowing us to have her on the show tonight to deliver her message to the world. And through her message tonight, I hope and pray that her message touched someone's life and someone's mind, heart, and soul, that they might straighten their life up that's going through the similar situations that Ms. Denise has went through. So we just ask you to take a great listening ear and take the message that she brings to you out to your neighborhood, out to your organization, and out to every outlet you can take it to. So without further ado, we will turn the mic over to Ms. Denise, and she will formally introduce herself, and we will get going.
Hello, all the listeners. This is Denise from Chicago coming to talk about and share the story of who said it couldn't be done.
That's right. Go ahead, Denise. Start, back from the very beginning. Let us know a little bit about how things were when you were small and what kind of environment you grew up in.
All right. I grew up here in Chicago on the West Side. In a family setting that, I once thought was a happy family. Everything was all going peaches and cream. Where you wake up Monday, Sunday through Thursday, where you're getting all the hot breakfast, clean clothes to go to school, and then when the weekend come around, it was party time. And when my grandmother would leave, I would be in the hands of my uncle, who would begin to, fondle my body. And then when my grandfather come home and he would be intoxicated, he would begin to manipulate my body. So things just began to escalate, along with many relatives, and then some of the male factors of the family would also start to do the same thing. And I lived with my grandparents until I was about 10, almost 11 years old, and I moved into the project with my mother. And when I got there, everything again was, appeared to be real happy. And I go away for 2 weeks to North Dakota and come back, and my mother's looking like a man. I'm saying in my mind as a child, what is really going on? Who was all these strange people that was in the household? Begin to have parties every weekend, having orgies and, the sound behind the wall, now that when I look at it, it was real curious to me to know what was going on the other side of the wall with all the noise and the, you know, the music. Until one time I just said, you know what, I'm going to hide this weekend, but when they come, I'll be in the closet so that I can see exactly what was going on. And I began to observe the party and see the different people my mother had there, and she would tell people if you want to be initiated in the club, you will have to have sex with certain people. And I happened to see this lady who was a virgin, and the man was having sex with her, and I began to see blood. I see her crying, and that messed my mind completely up. And I turned to my mother to ask her, why is she crying? And my mother said, oh, she's just getting her virginity, you know, taken. I didn't really understand fully what was taking place. But all I began to say in my mind was, I'll never have nothing to do with a man. I don't never want to. I started to view them as dogs. They hurt. It was painful. So I didn't want to have anything to do with them.
Right. And that was after you'd already been touched and what from different people, right?
Exactly.
Right. So what kind of a gang or group did your mom have that she had people be initiate like that?
Well, it was just a thing of by her being, now that I know she was bisexual, and different people wanted to hang out with her, and in order to hang out and have to be a part of the party on the weekend, they had to be initiated in. I guess it's kind of like anything else, the gang bangers, motorcycle club, you know, they have certain initiations that one must take in order to be a part. And within her group, you had to have sex with everybody that was in the group.
Wow.
So
men and women, then, if she was bisexual.
That is so true. That is so true. So that alone, this went on every weekend, every weekend. And she started to allow me to go with her to pick up her drug cartridges. And so when it started to get so bad, she would have me to go to pick up the cartridges. You know, and I started picking up the packages. And then one day she invited me to come sit in her shooting gallery with her and her friends and watch her shoot dope. And she said the reason that she did that was so that I would not do the same things that she was doing. She didn't want me to be like her. But I sat there and I observed every step that was taking place. And the next time she sent me to pick up her package, I took two bags of heroin out of the bag and I taught myself how to shoot because I had already seen how it was done.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the age of 12, that was when I first shot a bag of heroin. And as the time began to move on, I was introduced to a woman that was about 10 years older than I was, who turned me out into the lesbian lifestyle. So my life was just really, at the age of 12, just really spinning.
Right.
I began to, you know, miss school and hang out in the laundry room to keep from going to school. So somewhere between the fourth and the fifth grade, I kind of just started to just really, really stray away because of the things that I had encountered. I was beginning to be embarrassed because I didn't have the proper clothing to wear, wasn't really having anyone to comb my hair, to take care of me. It was just totally a mess. And so I just began to excel in the criminal lifestyle with her because she would, like, take me and my brother, and we would ride, and we would pop hubcaps off of cars. We would take them to what we call here Jew Town, where you take all your merchandise and trade it in for cash. Then we would go to the dope house and get drugs and come back. So my life was just constantly moving. And at this time, I end up getting addicted to heroin. It was almost a year later before she knew that I was shooting heroin.
Wow.
She came into a dope house that was in the building and saw me in there with the needle in my arm and wanted to kill everybody in the apartment. But it was not their fault. It was her fault.
Right. She showed you how to do it.
Exactly. Exactly. So I began to get going, you know, a spree of breaking into mailboxes at that time when they used to mail food stamps in the mail. So I began to break into the mailboxes, stealing the food stamps, breaking into some of the apartments that were in the project. And it just began to just escalate. I started hanging out with people who were doing real burglaries, real robberies, and I started to do those things with them.
Now, did you have your other siblings with you at the same time?
No,
when all this was going on?
We were in the household together. Out of the whole deal, I have right now the seven of us. I'm the oldest of seven.
Mm-hmm.
And I had one brother who turned out to be a drug dealer, and then I had another sister who was bisexual, prostitute, and a drug addict.
And they were all with you at the same home when all this was going on?
Yes. My brother would tell you right now today, you know, that my mother taught him how to hustle and do the things that he was doing.
Right. Well, you know, and as kids, if that's all you see, that's all you know. You know, you don't know that it's wrong because that's what mom's doing, and you love mom, you look up to mom. And, you know, if that's all you know, that's one thing that we try to tell people out here. If your kids, you know, they need to know right from wrong. That way, if they see something wrong, you know, they'll know how to change it and go back to what's right. But if all they see is wrong and negative, that's all they know, and they don't know any better.
That is so true, you know, and it, right now today with me being a drug addiction counselor and an HIV counselor, those are some of the things that I talk with the parents with, you know, that's in the group. The parents are the ones that the children are going to mimic.
Right. Yeah, no matter if they're doing right or wrong, it's still, you know, you look up to your parent and you know, most kids do want to do what mom and dad do.
That's so true. I recall when I first took a shot of dope, I thought back, I said, wow, this is just like my mother.
Hmm.
Now I'm just like her. And now looking back on it, I did those particular things because I wanted to be with her.
Right.
That was all I wanted was her. So in order to be with her, I had to do the things that she was doing so that I could be with her.
So when did your mom become a lesbian, and where was your father all this time?
Well, my father was not there. I would see him in passing. But when I finally knew that he was my father, he was a drug addict.
Wow.
He had came home from the military, and he was a drug addict. So I would just see him from here to there.
Did your siblings have the same father or different ones?
No. Everyone had a different father.
Wow. That's what happens in that lifestyle, I guess.
Yeah. It was truly a terrible lifestyle to live, because when I think back on being in the homosexual lifestyle and how I took on the whole image of living as a man, and that I stated that I never wanted to have anything to do with a man, but I took on the whole image of a man. I cut my hair, I wore the suit, I bought the penis, I did everything that a man did. You know, my mother was a pimp. You know, I had a few women who was out on the streets. I was just doing everything, the same things that she was doing. I was just patterning my life completely after her. And, you know, I recall going to jail one day, and I heard the guards when they brought me in to search me, and I had to get out my clothes, and I was sitting there with fruity balloon underwear on. It was the worst feeling in the world. It was the worst feeling in the world. And back then, at that time, I could hear them calling all the other guards to come. Look, we got a dyke in here. We got a dyke in here. That was a terrible, terrible feeling. And that day, I stepped out of those men's underwear and I left them right in the cell. I said, this will never happen again. But I continue, you know, but I continue to live the lifestyle.
Right. So how old were you at that time?
Well, like I said, everything that was taking place, it started taking place from the age of 12 until I was, 26, 27 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, I don't know, just sitting here thinking back and I'm just having flashbacks, you know, just recounting back on some of my experiences of even taking on that lifestyle, how living that lifestyle almost cost me my life. And
right.
Because I, you know, lived as a man and the men in the community didn't like it, they were my sister's friends, and I asked them to run me. I said, can you please take me out west? I was already high, and I was asking them, can you please take me out west? I wanted to cop some more drugs. You know, I was dropping pills, drinking syrup, and shooting drugs. And I said, can you run me out west? But I got in the car with them, and three guys, and I went into a nod, but I can hear them saying, man, we're going to rape this bee and kill her and throw her behind Boss Candy Company. We're going to show her who the real man is.
Wow.
And when the car comes to a stop, I am so grateful God brought me out my nod, and I jumped out the car and started running. So in my mind, I always stated, if a man would try to rape me, I would kill myself first.
Mm-hmm.
So by them chasing me, I end up jumping through a window. It was a two-flat building, and I jumped straight through the glass window. End up cutting my arms up, receiving 183 stitches.
Wow.
So, you know, so both arms were cut. My hand was hanging off. It just was a terrible lifestyle. And pretty much all this was due to my environment.
Right.
So today, Mr. Neese, what would you tell any young brother or any young sister that's even thinking about that type of atmosphere? Advice would you give them?
Well, one of the advices that I would strongly suggest is if a young person is living in a household that is not safe, that is unhealthy, I would seek guidance through, you know, my teachers. I would seek guidance through some of my friends, parents, anybody. I would look toward anyone who was doing better than the household that I was living in.
Good God. And when you first started straightening your life up, what really made you want to change as a person?
You know what, Rob, believe it or not, being a drug addict, shooting heroin, smoking crack cocaine, drinking syrup, dropping pills, you know, I sat in the garage one day and I was trying to shoot up and couldn't get high anymore. I had holes, abscess all over my body, and I said, it's got to be something better than this. I can't continue to live like this. And during this time, my mother had got her life together. She had attended this church. I said, well, let me go over here and check this church out and see what they're talking about. And when I got there and I heard something that I had never heard before, you know, I kind of thought my mother went there and told them about me. And that wasn't the case. So I kind of stayed away, and then things, you know, continued to get bad. And I said, hold on, I recall a place. We're talking about some things that I possibly can change my life. And that was one of the turning points, was when I made it there in 1986.
Dig that. And that's a blessing right there, you know, because, you know, I was out there in life real heavy at a young age, you know, and heroin was the first drug I ever sold in my whole life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So me listening to you, you know, that's why I've been real quiet, you know. Me listening to you, you know, I'm feeling all of that because, You know, it should be times where people started out, you know, snorting, you know what I mean, the raw, mm-hmm. you know, as we called it back in the day, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they come from snorting the raw to shooting the blow, you know what I mean? And we
right.
could call them scrambled eggs back in the day, you know.
That's
and,
right.
And for people to know about the heroin game, that the heroin was worse than crack cocaine, you know. And that's what a lot of people didn't fail to realize. You know, you need heroin every day you wake up.
Every,
and you're at the floor,
every
you need
day.
That.
Every
you know, crack,
day.
You can smoke crack all day and then go lay down somewhere, you know. But when you got that monkey is on your back with that buzz, you ain't put book down, you know what I mean? Because you got the runs and the shakes and all of that sweat.
Right.
You got to have
that's
that
right.
every day. So,
that's right. Like,
Go ahead, Denise.
No, I was going to say you are absolutely right because one drug is physiological and the other drug is psychological. So,
bottom
suddenly,
line, you know. Right. And it's like, you know, my homeboy, you know, he did 15 years, you know, a cat named Sonny, you know. And when we was in the projects, you know, I used to analyze everything for whatever I hustled, you know. And back in them days, you know, in the early 80s, you know, I came up with the thing where, you know, if the dopamine is going to, you know, to get my heroin, we need to set it up where they ain't got to go way across town to get their needle, you know? So I set it up to the point where you get your needle and your blow right here. You feel
right
me?
Here.
At the
one
same
stop
time.
One stop.
Right, and back in them days, you know, probably the same as you. You know, we sold $12, you know, spots, and then the $2 tops was for my runners, you know. So 10 came back to me, and the 2 came from my runners. So they was making $2,000 a week because I would sell 10 or 20 bundles, you know what I mean, a day,
mm-hmm.
and that was the start-off point, you know what I mean. So, yeah, I'm sitting here listening to you, and it's a blessing to shake heroin because everybody don't shake heroin, you know what I mean. Or crack. But heroin, if you shake that, you know what I mean, God done been good to you and definitely done gave you a second chance in life because, you know, that monkey ain't nothing to play with when they get on your back.
That is absolutely right. That is the truth. You know, and I sit back so often and I think about it. You know how most of the time when the pressure of life come to weigh you down, you know, you're losing jobs and things are, you know, bad relationships, things are not going right. You know, your sick thinking tell you, well, go back and pick up another bag of blow. But
right.
you know what, Rob, listen, the pain of addiction was so great on me, I was like, you know what, I can't do it again. I said, there's nothing in life that could be that bad that I need to resort back to picking up and using.
Right.
Every day I look at all the scars, the marks, and everything that I got on my body because of that addiction. I said, I can't do it again.
Yeah, yeah, because of that needle.
Right, can't do it again.
Right.
You know, Rob,
and
I was listening.
Go ahead, Denise.
No, I was getting ready to say, you know, it was just so terrible, you know, because even when times, and I don't know if you recall these, even when times began to change from where individuals were using heroin, you know, every season has its own drug thing. And I started shooting tees and blues.
Right, yeah, T-shirts and blue jeans, yeah,
that's
the tees
right.
and blues.
That's right, and
yeah,
started
yeah.
shooting those.
Sold
you know,
all of that,
and...
too. Yeah, hey, it ain't too many drugs that I ain't sold on the planet from a youngster, you know what I mean? And I sit back and listen to people, you know what I mean? And when you came through the neighborhood, if you didn't know what T-shirts and blue jeans was, you know what I mean? That means, you know, you ain't up on what's really happening, you know? That
exactly.
The T-shirts and blue jeans, you know what I mean, is another thing that they shoot, you know what I mean? So... you know, I had the Delilah Fours and the Demolals and the Black Beauties.
That's what I was doing. Shooting the Delilahs.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. I be quiet a lot of times in these, but yeah, I didn't have my hand on a whole bunch of things when it came to
mm-hmm.
that drug life.
Mm-hmm. You know, I set up and I had to count. I think I was doing over 16 different drugs. You know, drinking Tussinex, dropping Red Devils, Placidales, you know, like you said, the Delilahs, the Ritalin, you know, just doing
right,
it all.
They were big back in the 80s. Them Delilah Fords was big back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And them Dairy Up Somas and Infams and all of that. You know what I mean? Everything was shaking that was about dollars. I had it on deck.
Well, you know, and it's been, you know, it's been 25 years since I picked up and used.
And that's a blessing, girl. You know, that the chance God gave you was the chance that now he wanted you to let his people know where he brought you from. And this is a little thing that I tell people in life out here. You know, I don't care how bad or what you did in life, but God has blessed you and saved your life to the point where you can sit up and say, look where he brought me from. You know, that's the blessing right there. And God goes in the ghetto. He goes in the roughest of the roughest, the ghetto of the ghetto, and get his people and bring them out of that. You feel me? And once he dusts you off and you can stand up straight and tell the world, look what he's done for me, that's the testimony for the next man, the next woman, to look, it can't be done, and look what God did for me, for the next person to come on board. That's basically what all this is out here. You feel me? It's God's army, and he's grabbing his people one by one, you know what I mean, and cleaning them up one by one and 10 by 10 to let them know, yeah, this is what he can do for you too, my brother and sister, you know?
You know, and that's my whole dream, my whole passion, you know, is to be able to come back out into the communities and bring hope to the hopeless. And that was why one of the reasons, you know, God gave me the title of my book, Who Said It Couldn't Be Done? Because you have so many individuals that are out here who think that there is no hope, that there is no change, that, you know, they feel like they're the only ones going through everything that they're going through. So they feel like, look, I need to keep this to myself. Because don't nobody understand.
Right. We understand.
And you know, Rob, even not only that, you know, even living in the lesbian lifestyle, right? And when I look back and I think about living in that particular lifestyle and you know how now the world is sad, you know, that the person is born like that, you know, I totally disagree. Because all the times that I lived in that lifestyle, I always desired to be married. I always desire to have children.
Right.
But I
tell people the same thing, Denise. You ain't born like that. That's some shit that you get your ass out here in and some shit you be wanting to try. You know what I mean? Don't say you born like that. Just say this is some shit I want to try and you get your ass caught up in it out there. You feel me?
Because
when
you
were coming up back in your days, that shit was hidden, hidden, hidden.
Exactly.
You got young kids out here, you know what I mean, young as 12 or 13 years old, you know what I mean, and I keep it 100 on the show, you know what I mean, you got these young kids, these young boys out here shaking their ass like they women. And if you ain't careful, and when they turn around, you think their ass a woman. You feel me? So this is some shit that the modern day think is all good. You know what I mean?
And it's all stemming. Exactly. And it's all stemming from political, you know, because the political people are now, I'm coming out the closet. I realized I was like this. I was born like this. No, that's not true. And I tell, when I do my groups and I talk about this thing and I deal with risk reduction and how a person contracts HIV and all other STDs, now they have something on the market that's rising that people are not even paying attention to, which is oral sex throat cancer. Where is it coming from?
Right.
You know, nobody wants to think about that.
Right. And God is tired of that. Tired of BS, you know? Entities, female and a male, female taking all this crazy ass shit. You know?
And that's why I say, you know, and I certainly want to be that example, and I want to have an open ear, you know, as one who has been down various roads of being able to reach anybody on any road.
Exactly, because you don't do it on 10 roads at one time.
That's right.
You know, so a person who's done been on several roads, they know roads not to go down, and they know which roads to go down. You know what I mean? So you done been on both sides of the coin. You feel me? And now that you know what's wrong and you know what's right, you know what I mean? You know how to result back what's right if you make a mistake. Because everybody makes mistakes. There's nobody perfect, but at the same time, it's time for people to wake the hell up. Let's cut out BS and let's get life in order. You know what I mean? Because nobody owes you nothing. You know what I mean? You have to look in the mirror and say, I owe myself. I owe myself as an individual and as a person to do right for myself. And once people see you doing right for yourself, somebody's always willing to help you.
That's right.
And that's the bottom line.
And that's true, you know, and stop trying to find excuses for the stuff you're doing.
Right.
You know, so...
Going back, Denise, were you using drugs before you decided to take on the role of a man, or did you do that first to kind of protect yourself from the men in your lives that were abusing you?
It almost ran simultaneously, and I say that to this degree. Once I seen the things that was transpiring in the house, you know, and I don't know if you remember this, or maybe Rob remember this. When I was coming up, you know, you didn't boldly tell a girl or a boy that you liked them. We used to pass these little notes like, do you love me, yes or no? Can I have?
All of that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, all of that.
I used to pass these little notes, so I would tell my brother, which was liking the girl who was my friend, and her brother was supposed to be liking me. So I would have him running with this little note. Take this down here to such and such such, and I put in the note. Dear such and such such, I love you. Do you love me? Yes or no? Can I have some? Yes or no? No. And this was before I even really just went full-fledged into the lifestyle. And you know how you plan house, catch a girl, get a girl, and all that stuff.
All of that. How you go see her plan?
Her and I would be the one always run and hide in the dark hallways and be bumping and grinding.
Right. You know, everybody used to love playing hide and see, boy, back in the day.
Exactly.
That was the real thing, boy. At nighttime when it's about to get dark, we want to play hide and go seek before the streetlights come on.
That's right. And we used to lay in the bed, and I would tell my brother, you get down there with her, and I get up there with her. And he like, why are you always up there with her? I said, I'm telling her about you. But all at the same time, I'm liking her.
Right. Well, I'm talking about you, but I'm talking for myself up here, brother.
So it was, you know, so it was kind of like simultaneously the way things were just really happening. So, you know, and like I said, that house plan stuff, after seeing what took place in the house was surely giving me an avenue to say that I didn't want to have nothing to do with men. But yet and still I had these young boys that were, you know, would flirt with me, and we would try to bump and grind, and when I feel things rising up in their pants, I would take off and run, because I started to say, men hurt, boys hurt. I didn't want to have nothing to do with it.
Right.
So that just put me further, you know, that just pushed me further on into the lifestyle.
Yeah.
Right.
And I just want to tell you, Mr. PC, I used to be in Chi-Town, too, when I was younger, all through the 70s. You know, my people stayed in Capitol Green Projects, so we're a lot of my first cousins, you know?
Okay.
Yeah.
Now,
so
that
I know Chi-Town I know Chi-Town real good. I got people who stayed in Maywell, Illinois. some of my great aunts. They dead now, you know. But yeah, I used to be up there in Maywood a lot too, you know.
Okay. That was where I caught my first home invasion case was over there at 500 in Cabrini Green.
Right, already, you know. I was telling my wife a while back how when we used to come up to the Cabrini Greens, how we used to come up on the top floor, you know what I mean? It'd be dope fiends laying in the hallway, you know, piss all in the hallway, lights out, you know what I mean? Everything,
mm-hmm.
you know? So, yeah, you know, it was just like back in Detroit, you know what I mean? So when we came there, it was just like home for real, because back in them days, the ghetto was the ghetto for real,
That's right. It was similarities.
Right, you know, and it's just like when you're raised in a certain area or you're raised in a certain grade of life, you know, you pick up that lifestyle, and even though you straighten your life up, you know, your survival kit mentality still stays there, you know?
That's right.
Yeah, that's real talk. And anybody that done been in the street life for real, they will say the same thing I've just said tonight, you know what I mean? Even though I've changed my life to the righteous and things like that,
mm-hmm.
my survival kit mentally still stays that way.
Definitely knowing
how to survive, you know?
That's right. And that's why they say, you hear some people say sometimes, you know, addicts are the sharpest individuals on the face of the earth because all they need to do is clean themselves up. You know, they already know how to survive.
Amen.
They already know how to make money, and why not do it legal?
Right. Because you don't travel that other role. You know what I mean? So now you can take that, turn that into the corporate world and make that a 500 company. You see what I mean?
You know, it's just so strange because I tell individuals who, and I'm not against a person who go through a 12-step program. I said, but you know, when you go through a 12-step program or you go see a psychiatrist, I said, pretty much they almost is just as sick as you. I said, they're trying to analyze you, and you already know the answer to the problem.
Amen. You feel me?
You know, I don't need no psychiatrist to tell me. Well, why you shoot me? Why you smoking cocaine? Well, I'm doing it because I was molested. You know, I'm doing
right.
it because
I
come up
I'm
in the exactly. So you gonna give me a whole bunch of medication to try to medicate the pain and making me
right.
more addicted to something else?
Right.
The only thing I got to do is just straighten my act up, and I know that within myself. Now you done gave me some shit that done got 10 side effects to it. Now I'm somebody else.
You know, and the key to healing almost in every problem is what? Forgiveness.
Amen.
I was a victim. I was a victim, and you victimized me. So in order for me to heal, I need to forgive you so that I can take my power back and live.
That's right. So how was your mom able to change? You said she eventually changed her life. What do you know what in her life made that turning point?
Well, I don't know exactly what was her turning point, but I do recall a lady that was living next door to us in the project who were always, you know, trying to tell her and myself about Jesus. And I was like, lady, look, I don't want to hear that. I remember when you was a drunk.
Mm-hmm.
I ain't trying to hear about no Jesus. Don't try to tell me about my fun. But my mother had got to her wit's end. And so the lady took her to the same place she went to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how my mother ended up getting changed. And 6 years later, I came behind her. 4 years later, my sister, who was a drug addict, came behind me.
Right.
So go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, all that you mentioned, you know, it all goes with that lifestyle. But going back to the group that your mom, was she the leader of that group that she had?
Yeah.
That people had to be initiated in. So a lot of people looked up to her and followed her as a leader of the group, I guess. But, you know, what you say, you know, people need to realize that when you're in the drug game, that prostitution and pimping and hustling and, you know, all that goes hand in hand.
Oh, yeah.
you know, a lot of people, I don't know if they don't know that or they don't think about it or, you know, but there's so much even today, you know, with the drug use and the sexual exploitation and stuff, you know, whether it's the girls are kidnapped or the girls are runaways or they're brought from another country or, you know, whatever it is. But a lot of times they're, you know, they're drugged up and they're, you know, chained into rooms and locked into houses and forced to you know, prostitute and have sex with people. And, you know, then it, in turn it makes them angry and it makes them, you know, maybe turn to other drugs or maybe turn to, you know, to murder to escape. Or, I mean, it's just kind of like an ongoing, an ongoing thing.
And it's so true. And if you notice, you know, most of the young people today, they tend to feel like their peers can relate and, you know, show them love that they don't even get in their families, in their households.
Right.
So that's one of the driving factors to them is that, well, I'm not getting love at home, but if I go out in the streets, you know, my peers are going to love me. But then you have to look at if you're in a single parent, if you're in a single parent household, you know, if the mother isn't totally engaged in a relationship, the child is going lacking.
Mm-hmm.
Because all that attention is going into this relationship, so the child feels like, well, you know what, my mama don't love me, you know, she don't even listen to me. But if I go next door, my friend listening to me, and my friend is a crackhead, my friend smoking blunt.
Right.
So now I'm being introduced into something, and I'm feeling like that person loved me, and now I'm getting caught.
Right.
So today, you know, most of the parents, they want to be friends and they want to sit back and get high and party with their children instead of being a parent.
That's true. It happens all the time, and they need to be parents instead, you know. Yeah, it's
yeah,
tough
it's,
out here.
Yes, it is, and my heart truly goes out to them because I just did an engagement 2 Saturdays ago, and all of the 12 and 13-year-old girls who, you know, participated and raised their hand and stated, you know, that they had already tried sex and, you know, and it's just terrible.
Right.
Nobody's there to guide their life.
You know, and the sad thing is that society, you know, seems to make it almost seem like it's okay, you know, and the way the videos and the music and the TV shows and, you know, commercials, everything's about sex or sexuality. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, and these young girls today think that, you know, that it's okay to do these things, you know, to have sex and have oral sex and to do all these things out here at, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13 years old. And, you know, and if you do it, you're, you know, you're accepted and you're loved or cared for. And if not, then, you know, you're not in the group or you're not a good, you know, it's just a lot of pressure, I think, out here, especially
and
on the
you
young
know what?
Women.
Right, and you know what? One of the things is, and maybe you could contest to what I'm going to say. Rob can contest what I'm going to say. What I'm getting ready to say is, you know how the minute you get in a relationship with somebody, and it starts off one way, and then the boy might say, "If you love me, you will try this.
Mm-hmm.
If you love me, you will let me do this to you." And that's what's going on today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you love me, I got to prove a point. And
right.
I think about when I was introduced to this woman in this lesbian lifestyle and how she baited me in and she manipulated my body. She did all the performing of the oral sex and the different things that were taking place. And after a year, I believe, or so, she began to, you know, do this whining, "If you love me, you do me." And I was like, "Do what?" You know, and
mm-hmm.
I'll teach you what I want you to do.
Right.
And that's the same thing is going on today that went on back 20 years ago.
Right.
They just only turned the heat up, and like you said, society it has redeemed and approved having sex.
Right.
You know,
and these young girls need to realize that, you know, the boys are saying, if you love me, you'll have sex with me. You know, the girl needs to tell the guy, if you love me, you wouldn't try to force me to make that choice right now. I choose to wait.
Exactly.
And, you know, and respect their choice, their decision at that time.
That is, and like you said, and it's the same thing that, you know, a person who's on drugs or alcohol, you know, they put up these signs, down 1-800 number if you have a drug problem, if you have a smoking problem. But yet,
right.
yet it's still, you're still selling it at the corner store.
Right.
You're still promoting it. So, and it's the same thing in sex. You're talking about STDs and, you know, ways to keep from getting pregnant, but yet it's still, you're still saying, I got condoms. I got Viagra. You know.
Right.
So it's sending mixed messages.
Right. That's so true.
I don't know, Lucinda, what we can really do besides what we're doing to really educate them. And you know how they say, if we can save one person and help one person change their life, you know, they can hopefully touch somebody and help change their life.
Right. We need to get back to the basics of, you know, values, morals, and self-esteem. And, you know, going back to the TV stuff again, it's all geared towards sexuality of the women, because in the commercials and the TV shows, you know, the men are dressed. They're not even in shorts. They have pants and shirt and shoes
mm-hmm,
and socks.
Mm-hmm.
The women are, you know, naked pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're the ones
mm-hmm.
in the bikinis and the you know, hardly nothing on. So, I mean, it's not, it's just kind of one-sided. You know, they
mm-hmm.
don't ever show the men dancing around in a G-string or anything, you know. It's serious, though. On videos, it's always the women. On TV shows, it's always the women. But the men are fully dressed, usually.
Mm-hmm. And you know what they say? One thing they say, a man is going to be a man no matter what he do. But if a woman lay down and flat back and turn tricks, she's a slut, she's a tramp, she's a whore, she's a beast. The list goes on and on and on. And he's
right.
doing the same thing.
Exactly. Exactly. The standards are mixed up.
You know, I recall, you know, when I did grow up, and you know how you used to get in trouble, and the neighborhood, you know, the next door neighbor can spank you, and then take you home to your parents, and they will spank you.
Right.
Now, like you said,
all these don't, but they you know, you try to do that nowadays. These young cats and girls, they are here shooting you.
Exactly.
Or you're going to jail for assault.
Exactly.
So you know, people lost all hope trying to, you know, sit down and tell a person's child something, because that was the neighborhood thing. You could be round the corner, up the street, down the street. Everybody in the neighborhood knows you, and they know, you know, if you mess up, so-and-so, so-and-so, or sister so-and-so going to tear your butt up when you get back around that house.
Yeah,
but I'm going to take you around now. You know what I mean? With a toe-up butt, and you're going to get one right there. And you remember back in the old days, Denise, when, you know, you used to go in school. This is an elementary school where they used to have that paddle with them holes in it, and your parents
That's
used
right.
to come up there
That's
and
right.
let the principal spank your ass.
That's right. And you remember, when our parents told us, you better be here before the lights come on the street. You
yeah.
better be sitting on this.
You got your head slapped on the meter's pool. Straight out. Nowadays, these kids, they don't give a damn what their parents say. You know, the parents say being at a certain time, they have to go all night long. You hear me?
All night. I remember when I was hanging out one day and it got past, 10 o'clock and the police picked me up and brought me home. You know, curfew.
Mm-hmm.
You already said I was a bad look there.
What, say that again, Ron?
I said you already know when the police had brought you on for the curfew, that was a bad look. You know what was waiting on you when you got to the set.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But these kids nowadays, they don't care what their parents say. You feel me?
Look, I pulled up by expressway. You know how you sit in your car, you just sitting there waiting for the light to change. There was a little boy sitting over on the bucket, so I'm looking at him, right? Because he was out there hustling. And he kept standing, and then I kept standing at him. Then he turned around, he said, what the F you looking at?
Oh.
I mean, he had to be about 11 or 12 years old. I wanted to just get out that car and just knock that boy out.
I hear you.
Yeah. You know, and nowadays, like I said, it's just too many people nowadays, you know, just want to be cool and not be the parents. You know, everybody want to sit around the table and drink and get high with their kids and all that crazy ass shit.
Mm-hmm.
And then they look up and wonder why their kid don't respect them. Well, your kid ain't going to respect you, you know what I mean? Because they saying, well, I'm doing the same shit with you. I said, I respect you.
That's right.
And that's
that
the bottom
so
line.
True.
Respect
that
is out
so
the household
true.
Now, you know, because nowadays, a parent will tell their son that's out there hustling, hey, don't forget to bring mama a sack of dope in tonight, or don't forget to bring mama some weed, or don't forget, whatever your ass hustling, don't forget to bring mama her pack tonight.
That's right. That's right.
That's the bottom line. You know, that's how it's going on nowadays, you know?
Yeah, they don't care,
you know? They don't care what little Johnny's doing, as long as he's keep bringing that thing home.
That's right.
At the end of the
mm-hmm.
night.
And the part about it is, you go to juvenile, you know, I come get you. The judge will call for me to come get you.
Right. And a lot of times, the way things going in now, that call ain't going to come through. You know what I mean? Because in certain states, I don't know about Chicago, but in Detroit years ago, they passed that law that at the age of 13 years old, you can be bonded over. You know what I mean? To the county
yeah.
jail at 13.
Yeah, because they do it. Yeah, because of the cases that they're doing now, the type of crimes
right.
that
so
they're doing.
So don't think mama coming because you 13 or 14 years old. If you got a certain case, pimp, mama ain't going to be there to pick you up unless she got that straight cash money, and I doubt if she got that.
Well, that's why so many kids are placed in the system as teenagers, and they're in there for life when they shouldn't be, you know, or...
Yeah.
Or in there as an adult when they're really children and they should be treated like children no matter what they've done because, you know, all they know is what they've seen from the adults in their life and taught, you know, just like you. You did what your mom did because that's all you saw. That's all you knew.
The court system don't care about none of that. They don't care about what no kids seen their parents do. What the court system care about is that we finna make this money off of you. Plus, we gonna go. You say you murdered somebody. Okay, then we finna ship you right over there where the murderer is at. Then, since you that guy, you know,
trying to
and
make examples out of
right.
Trying to you know
yeah,
trying to make
that's
examples.
That's the bottom
out
line.
And all you
it's
do
it's a money
and
thing
you,
now with the jail system. It's a money thing. It ain't that you in jail now getting no 3 meals a day and all that because. A certain state, they done cut the workout thing down. They done took all the workout hookup. Well, you ain't going to gym working out nothing. You know what I mean? And you lock down 23
that's
hours
right.
a day.
And why should I pay? Why should I pay you double time? Pay you to come and work and make items for me, plus pay you to
right.
sleep and eat here too?
Right.
Right.
You know, they just passed this law in Ohio, and that the inmates got to pay out their little state money they get, you know how they get
mm-hmm.
their little $12-$16 a month from the state, you know, automatically.
Right.
Yeah, they got to pay a dollar of that now in order to keep their electric and their TV on in their room, you know. So the government going to make a way.
Too.
Yeah, the government going to make a way to keep that money right back in their system, you know what I mean? Period. So you paying to stay in the joint now. It ain't that you finna do no crime and kick your feet up, you know.
Well, a lot of the prison systems now are private, too, and they're getting federally funded or however they're doing it. But it's costing, what does it cost now to keep an inmate for a year? $40,000, $45,000, $50,000 a year? That I mean, it's a big profit. It's a big moneymaker.
It's a big business now. Yeah,
and
everybody
you
know,
has
known I'm feeling.
That's
you
right.
Know, and you know how they said, all it's doing is making a full circle right back around. You got to keep the money coming
modern.
Right back around. Full circle.
It's a modern-day slavery now in the prison system, period.
Well, what upsets me too is that, you know, you're not taught to succeed when you get out. You're just expected to fail and go back in. You know, nobody will hire you. You know, everybody looks down on you because you're an ex-offender. You know, whether, I mean, all of us out here make mistakes. Some of us just don't get caught. You know, and so why not give a brother or sister a chance to come out here and to be able to work and take care of my kids and my family instead of continually say, no, you can't work here because you made a mistake. I'm sorry. You know, go elsewhere. And everywhere you go, you get told the same thing. No, you screwed up. You made a mistake. Even though you did your time, we still, you know, don't approve of it. So, no, we're not going to hire you.
You know, and now that
they need to change that period. You know what I mean? That convicted felons can't, you know, vote. They done changed it in certain states, but they need to change that in every state in America, that only because you're a convicted felon, you allowed to get a job. You know what I mean? You're allowed to work places, you know?
And you know, that's
you're
part
allowed
of part,
to do something.
You know, that's part of the thing that I'm facing right now. I was before I called into the show, I was sitting up here preparing my paperwork because I had went and applied for a job with Greyhound Bus Company and had got the position. You know, it was over $55,000 a year for a maintenance supervisor.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't want to give me the job because I was arrested 31 years ago for a robbery.
Exactly.
Now, I was given the job, but the day for me when the day came for me to start the job, they started to ignore it and said that I couldn't get the job. So right now I'm putting together my stuff to fight the charges. Now, and I had 17 charges on my name. Had he really ran my background, he would have saw that nothing would have come up. I got all my proof to show that I cleaned up my background, got everything sealed in the process of getting everything, you know, getting it all expunged, take away the seal and expunge it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Now, if politics can go to jail and come out and get a job, why can't we?
Right. And then not just get a job, you go back to your damn position.
Exactly.
Right. Or like here in Arizona recently, one of the senators got in a public fight with his girlfriend, fiance, domestic violence. She got arrested. He didn't. And he got to stay in his position as one of the senators here in Arizona, or House of Senate, or whatever he does. But he didn't get in trouble at all, and he can't be taken. Or he told the police, "You can't arrest me because I'm a public figure," and they didn't.
Mm.
So you know the laws are really twisted out here when it comes to just about everything.
And it's the same thing. It's the same thing here. Just like they said, they're strict in numbers. But
definitely.
We on the other side, you know, and we on the other side, we need to come together and strengthen because we're the only ones that can really change it.
Right. It's up to the people to change things, you know, make the laws and change the laws, and it's by your voting power.
Right.
And but which, again, is taken away from a lot of ex-offenders. You know, you can't carry a gun. You can't vote. You can't do this. You can't do that. Why not? I'm still a United States citizen, am I not? I made a mistake. I paid my time. Let me out. Let me be free.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
What?
But that's the way that is. You feel me? And we would just like to say, you know, it's been a great, great show tonight, you know. And any shout-outs you would like to give anybody, Mr. Neese?
You know, I truly enjoyed this opportunity to be able to speak with you and your wife and, you know, over the air to many individuals, and I hope and pray that what has been said tonight, that someone will take it and apply it to their heart and, you know that no matter what road that you're on, of drugs, crime, prostitution, you know, homosexuality, lesbian lifestyle, whatever the lifestyle might be, know that you do not have to continue to live that way. I'm making myself available. If you go out on Facebook, you know, and look up Denise Jones, you know, you could connect with me from there. And hopefully, you know, that we can make some change.
Right. You know, before we let you go, you know, we talked a lot about the wrong things that you did in your past. Let everyone know a little bit about what you went through in your conversion and changing over, and how someone else out there in the same situation can get help.
Right. Currently, you know, like you said, we covered a lot of ground talking about things that I went through. And today, you know, like I said, my profession is a HIV and substance abuse counselor. So therefore, you know, I make myself available, make the avenues available for whoever is seeking their way out.
Right. As far as support when they're trying to get out, or you know, people that they can talk to when, you know, when they want to change their life and they're not sure how to go about it, what would your suggestion be?
Spirituality, you know, if you don't have any type of spirituality, that would be your number one out. If it's a, if it's with the young people, you can look towards your, you know, YMCA and this community groups, you know, that can give you some guidance.
Right. So just find a lot of support and be around the right kind of people.
Exactly. And don't be afraid to tell a person no. You know, don't,
exactly,
don't allow yourself to be put up under the pressure that, well, I'm not going to be your friend if you don't try this and if you don't do this. Well, if a person tell you that, they're not your friend anyway.
Right, exactly. And decide to be a leader, not a follower. You know, do your own
exactly
thing, make your own rules.
Exactly.
Definitely, definitely.
That is so true.
Right, and you can put your information up on our website as well. I know I put your little video that you had, that I found from YouTube, mm-hmm, about your book and your book picture, picture of you and your book, I should say. But you can definitely, you know, always add information, blogs, different things like that on our website. And, you know, we're, the Streets Don't Love You Back movement is out here to help everyone, you know, from all aspects of the street life, to be able to choose positive things and to make changes. And, you know, we have resources for drugs and alcohol and assault and violence and all kinds of things on our website as resources. So,
and I really love the topic, you know, the streets don't love you back. And that is a true thing. The streets
definitely
can never love you back.
That's right.
The streets are totally self-destructive, you know.
Thank you,
When I saw that topic, I said, wow, you know, that title, the streets don't love you back. And I had to think about that. The streets don't love you back. Wow,
well, we're you know, glad that you were able to change your life around and that you're here to share your story and your book. Who said it couldn't be done? You know, because it can. You went back, you got your GED, you went back to, you know, college and got your master's degree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're out here, you know, counseling people about, you know, those types of things. And, you know, we're really, really, you know, God spared you for a reason, and obviously you're doing it. So, you know, we really appreciate that.
And you know what's so strange with us having this conversation, right? You know how most people who listen to the show or most things that we talk about is always about men. You know, men going to the penitentiary, men serving all this time, men selling all the drugs, you know,
mm-hmm,
and to have a woman on the other end that was doing the exact same things that the men were doing.
Right. And there is a lot of women out here doing the exact same thing.
Yes. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, wow. There's a lot of women locked up as well.
Yeah, this has been a great conversation, great opportunity, you know, to even sit back and share.
Right. Definitely. Well, we really appreciate you coming on and telling your story, and we, you know, want you to continue working with us, you know, through our website and the Streets Don't Love You Back movement. And, you know, hopefully one of these days we can come to Chicago and do a speaking and get together with you or something.
Okay, sounds great. I'm hoping this, and I'm hoping I can come out your way.
That sounds good too. Let us know if you ever come out this way so we can get together.
All right, sounds great.
All right.
Sounds great.
So we just want to let everybody know that tonight we're talking with Miss Denise Jones. She's the author of Who Said It Couldn't Be Done, and she's lived a life full of many changes, and from the street world, you know, to meeting God. And so we just want everyone to know that it can be done. She did it, and she's here to talk about it. And, you know, if you ever want to change your life and get away from the wrong things, there's, you know, just get the right support behind you and choose the right friends and make the right decisions. You know, we've always said, you know, it's all about choice, and you don't have to follow people because they're, you know, trying to force you be your own person and be a leader and just make that right decision and that right choice and you know, get around positive people and make it happen. Join us every Wednesday night here at the Streets Don't Love You Back radio show. You know, every Wednesday night we're talking with somebody that's, you know, been out there and done that and now here to share their story. So once again, Denise, we thank you for joining us. And do you have any more last shout-outs that you want to give out to anyone or say anything? Give you
pretty much, you know, it's been said, and I just truly enjoyed the opportunity to be able to even put this information out there. I'm really looking forward to hearing back from individuals that are looking for a way out. So those of you that are not afraid to step up and put your feelings to the side and put out there what's going on with you, what you need help with, what you want to talk about, what kind of directions you need, please contact us. We're here for you.
Amen.
And you can find Denise at whosaiditcouldn'tbedone.com, or she has a Facebook, Denise Jones. And then also you can get her book on Amazon.com. We are going to go out with a song tonight, Guide and Protect Us by Rising Sun. Everyone have a great week. And remember, the streets don't love you back. And we'll meet you back here next Wednesday night.
Oh, great.
Guide and protect us, Lord. Give us your grace and your strength and your mercy. Swinging the two-edged sword. I'm fighting for justice, so nothing can hurt me. Even when I pass away, my legacy lives on through my seed and my working. Every little thing I pray. Give thanks to your grace and your strength and your mercy, your mercy. The first one I call every day when I wake and pray. Yeah, the one who is there when no one has a care, I say, Lord, you strengthen my soul when my mind wants to go astray. Yeah, and lift me up high when I fall and my ground gives way. Lord, how precious your love and your grace and your counting days. Lord, you show me the light and the dark, now I shall repay. Yeah, with all of my strength I will fight with an iron fist. Lord, the freedoms of hate and the seed today don't exist. Guide and protect us, Lord. Give us your grace and your strength and your mercy. Swinging the two-edged sword. I'm fighting for justice so nothing can hurt me. Even when I pass away, my legacy lives on through my seed and my working. Every little thing I pray. Give thanks to your grace and your strength and your mercy, your mercy. When enemies close all around, I will call your name. Yeah. And slaughter the weak, you quickly with no thought or shame. Lord, for my heart is firm in your hands, so I'm no disgrace. No, I'll hail up your name with a smiling face. Boy, I never can give in a praise to your tenderness. Lord, to be in your infinite grace is my happiness. Yeah, no matter the time or the place, you're a miracle. Lord, you show me the light and the dark, so I shall repent. Guide and protect us, Lord.
give us your grace and your strength and your mercy, swinging that two-edged sword. I'm fighting for justice, so nothing can hurt me, even when I pass away. My legacy lives on through my seed and my working, every little thing I pray. Give thanks to your grace and your strength and your mercy, your mercy.
Yeah, we tried the long rocky road, Buffalo soldier, fight the power, freedom, war. The last step on the throne, the conquering disciples, burn your congregation, yeah. Collect your security, rebuild a better nation, time beside the unity. Say nothing and fight, nothing and war, but brotherly love can destroy oppression. If we come together, we can conquer all our foes, live victory eternally. But if we keep on murdering, see so much petty things, we're crumbling our destiny. But we were meant to rule upon the earth and multiply creativity and love, so I will always strive to show love and respect until I die. And so I will humble and pray, guide and protect us, Lord. To give us your grace and your strength and your mercy, swinging that two-edged sword. I'm fighting for justice so nothing can hurt me, even when I pass away. My legacy lives on through my seed and my working, every little thing I pray. Give thanks to your grace and your strength and your mercy, your mercy.